I was supposed to tell this story about how Kane had this girlfriend that he killed in a car crash. And it was just insane. And it ends up, I'm at a funeral home with a dummy in a coffin.
Oh, my God.
With Kane's mask on, pretending I'm Kane. I'm on top of the coffin having mock sex with this mannequin.
Oh, my God. No.
And
Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. And Vince is yelling at me, God damn it. Do it harder. Make more noise and stuff. It's got to be over the top.
I really did. I screwed your brains out.
Oh, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers this weekend. And as I've always been, the B.B. King quote is my favorite thing of all time. Don't nobody love me but my mama, and she might be jabbing me. So
that's right. Daggone.
Take
Matter
care of all.
Fact, let's see here. Let me look over here.
You got some B.B. King action going on there?
Sure enough, do.
Look, there
track
it is.
Track number 9.
There it is. Nobody loves me but my mother. Holy shit. There's a moment of serendipity or synchronicity or something. What's that? What is that album? Turn it around. That's the best. The best of the King. How about that? Fantastic. All of the great mothers in pro wrestling history. Who are some of your favorites? Certainly, you got to think about Christine Jarrett. Got to be one of the great mothers of all time when it comes to that. I got to say Linda McMahon, of course, one of the great mothers of all time.
Judy Bagwell.
See, why do you have to ruin things?
Sorry.
Why do you have to ruin shit by bringing up Judy Bagwell? I was going to go with the Guerreros, and I was going to go all the great mothers in the history of this business, and here you are doing that shit.
Well, you know somebody's mother. What is golly? His name is on the tip of my tongue. The one they did the Dark Side of the Ring on from World Class, the Gino Hernandez.
Oh, Gino Hernandez is
his mother. I mean, just from that episode, I got to throw her in there. I love her, man.
And you know, there's going to be, and you saw, we're going to talk about Dark Side of the Ring now because you're such a huge fan of Brian Pillman, and I thought that episode was just fantastic. And there's some people who are going to be celebrating Mother's Day, and they're not necessarily the ones who, you know, Brian Pillman's aunt, he considers her as much a mother as his own mother and has a very complicated relationship with his own mother who, wow. What did you think of that episode of Dark Side of the Ring opening up season number 3?
I was pleased. With the way they did it, that is. I was interested to see what Melanie was going to say. I don't know if I expected her to say the stuff she did. I didn't realize that she was, and I really don't know if she is or not. I just assume she's straight now. I don't know. They never really said. I mean,
I think she looks like she's clean. Melanie, if you didn't see the episode, is Brian's mother and is a complete mess of a human being. But the thing that I appreciated so much is it does own her past bad behavior.
I tell you, man, you're right. And that's exactly what I was going to say. I think she owned everything. Now, you know, it's up to everybody else to decide whether or not they think she means it or not. She's right. She's true in what she says. I would hope so. She seemed like it. I think Brian Jr. seems to think so, or I don't think he would have any kind of relationship with her. I think there's some hard feelings there with the other two, with the girls, and I can understand that. It's not their mother, for one thing.
Exactly.
So I think that's a big thing, and I think some of us in our own families can relate to situations kind of like this.
Sure.
Unfortunately.
Sure.
So I did relate to that, as a matter of fact. So I was interested in some of that stuff that I wasn't. I didn't know about, like for instance, like I said, her, Melanie, whether she's clean or not, and if she, what all she was going to say. And I think I need to go back and watch it again to kind of digest it one more time, you know?
Well, I felt like Melanie was just the slightest bit disingenuous too with, was Brian on drugs? Well, no, just the pain pills. that's almost like the Elvis definition of being a drug addict, right? Elvis was always against druggies, but he didn't consider himself to be a drug addict because Dr. Nick just kept feeding him everything and they were legitimate prescriptions, at least.
They were legit, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So all of that stuff I thought was kind of, that's the only real cop out from her. I felt like the part where they had her go on Monday Night Raw the night after her husband died and she was not being that hard on Vince, I thought she could have been way harder on Vince than they were, but I think the audience was left with the right impression of that whole situation.
I think so, too. And you know what, dude? You probably didn't, but I'd forgotten about that. I'd forgotten they brought her on. I mean, I remembered it once they talked about it, but I didn't think about it. And boy, it was cringy. Yeah, maybe I blacked it out because it was so cringy the first time I saw it.
It's always difficult to pick out some of Vince's worst moments, and you can go through any number of things, including, you know, the getting the suitcase full of money over to Pennsylvania to pay off the officials after Jimmy Snuka murders somebody, or you can talk about saluting Chris Benoit when they had a pretty good idea that Benoit had murdered his entire family. This has to be in the top 1/10 of 1 percentile of bad shit that Vince McMahon has ever done, as far as being exploitative and just awful and insensitive and everything else, right?
And damn, dude, thinking about that now, why? I mean, of all so many wrestlers have passed away like that, why did they have to interview Melanie of all people after Pillman died? I mean, why? What was the reason? Why him over nobody else? Why, you know what I'm saying? It's just kind of odd that
this to me is ironic because Vince is always the first guy to bitch about the media, but this is clearly an if it bleeds, it leads kind of situation. We've got this woman. Everybody's going to want to watch it. We're going to pop a number and people are going to go, I can't believe, you know, I got to feel that's part of it. I got to feel that may be the whole thing. I don't think it's any more complicated than that.
Well, you're right. And two, the way everything kind of led up to that, I mean, we're talking about the same person who pulled a gun out.
Exactly.
On Raw. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of fitting, I guess.
It is. That whole situation was terrible. I was watching this with the girlfriend who completely enjoyed it. And there were a couple of points when she, after it was over, she goes, are you tearing up? I went, yeah, there was a couple of times I teared up during that whole thing. I don't make any excuses for that. I mean, when Brian Jr. is talking about there was nobody to throw a ball with him and stuff like that, how could you not feel for that kid?
That was awful, man. That was just terrible, horrible.
And you try to, you know, you contrast that with the guy that we've met, you know, at some, like at WrestleCade and stuff. And he seems to be such, and I hope this is real and based on what I'm seeing and what I've heard about this guy, he seems to be such a well-adjusted, mature kid because he was thrown into this awful situation. He had to grow up at a very young age. And he's had to work through a very complicated relationship with his own mother. It's amazing the kind of strength and the kind of perspective that he has on life. You know, I heard when they were doing that first pay-per-view before there was even an AEW, that he was up there in Chicago for that thing. And somebody was asking, well, why are you not booked on this card? What's the deal? And he goes, well, I'm not ready for that. I thought, well, that's an astounding amount of maturity.
Yeah. Who says that?
I mean, in a business where nobody says shit like that, I thought that was just astounding, and I thought it was great, and I really hope that that's what. But those were the two, to me, the two money quotes from the. And by the way, the star of hour number one was Kim Wood. My God, is Kim Wood not? Holy shit, is he not your hero?
He's like Mr. Let's just lay the cards on the table.
Holy
That's
shit.
That's who he is.
Man, Kim Wood just doesn't give a fuck. He's looking around for fucks, and there's just none of them. He can't get one of them.
I'm sorry, buddy. I have zero left.
He ain't got no fucks at all. Kim, the two money quotes were, well, what do you think about Vince? He goes, well, what do you do to a whore?
I know, man. I was like, wow.
Zoinks. And then
deeper.
the money quote from hour number two was basically when Brian Pillman, and I'm paraphrasing, says, like, what am I supposed to do? Hate my mother for the rest of my life? I thought those were the two money quotes for the whole thing. And you know, it's remarkable. It's amazing how those two guys who produced Dark Side of the Ring continue to put out great stuff. And I just heard them on the Jericho podcast with some ideas and stuff that they want to do in the future. And there's no end to it. They've spun it off now. There's going to be a Dark Side of Football that they're trying to do on Vice as well. And
I think, what do you think about that?
Well, there's a lot of stuff there. And again, you know, if you think the WWE is resistant to having these stories told, the NFL is way more
Roger Goodell, line two. I mean,
if you saw the movie that Will Smith was in about the concussions, what they did to that doctor up in Pittsburgh, holy shit, talk about running a guy out of town. Man. You know, the NFL don't play. So if you think the WWE is like a mafia situation or something like that, you know, the NFL is going to be way more resistant to some of the shit that comes out. But
I'm sure.
Yeah, the story was exceptionally well told. I'm looking forward. This Nick Gage thing is such a wild card. That whole situation is so bizarre. And then I think the North Korea one and the plane ride from hell looks like that's going to be. I was hearing them tell some stories about the plane ride from hell, which everybody thinks they know about, but they really don't. And it was just a recipe for disaster because they were at the end of this awful tour, I think, of Europe. And the boys were stuck on the plane for like 6 hours on the runway. So for 6 hours, they just kept wheeling them out, all the booze in the world. So it's a recipe for just disaster. It's like, yes, Mr. Kaczynski, would you like some more dynamite? Sure. That'll be fine. Yes, Mr. McVeigh, another couple of gallons of gasoline for you. I'll be happy to go ahead and hook you up. So that's essentially what was going down on that one.
Now, I may be getting these confused because you hear about so many stories on plane rides, but is the Ric Flair naked under the robe story, is that the plane ride from hell? Is that a whole different?
That happened on several different plane rides.
Oh, okay. That was different. More than one time. Okay.
The highlights of this one were Michael Hayes getting his ponytail cut off by, I think, X-Pac. I think X-Pac was the guy who did that. And then because he's passed out. He's fucking out of his – he's drunk. Right?
That's so great, man.
And then Brock and Kurt decide that they're going to start shooting on each other right there in the fuselage. And then I think various –
right there in the fuselage.
They are. They're just going to start fucking around. They're going to fuck around and find out, 18 years before that becomes a thing. And then I think various stewardesses or attendants, whatever we're calling them, I believe that they were propositioned in ways that would be – actionable under any circumstances, but certainly by today's standards.
I'm sure. Well, I can only imagine.
So I think those are going to be very interesting. So those are the ones you look forward to. And you saw the most recent episode of the WWE, the documentary series on A&E.
I haven't seen it yet. No,
we got Piper and then Macho, and then Booker T is the one that they're going to premiere coming up on Sunday.
Sunday, yeah. Sunday's going to be a surprise at that one. But I mean, I'm glad.
Yeah.
You know, but I they went from like two or three people that everybody has heard of that has nothing to do with wrestling and has heard of. And then you go to Booker T, you know, it's like, wow. Okay.
He's not quite as salacious, but he has been to prison. I guess that's
a part of the story to tell for sure. Yeah.
For sure. And there's something there. And then, you know, his possible political aspirations in the future. So those are all interesting things but he's a compelling personality. I don't know how, like you said, I don't know if he's going to do a number versus some of those other personalities that have already been there, but there's just a tremendous amount of wrestling content. And some of it's actually watchable. Some of it's actually decent these days. So it's very, very interesting. One of the great controversies now in wrestling, how are you on the crash pad sequence at the end of Blood and Guts? Are you disgusted? Are you crazed about it? What's your thought?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what the discussion is. Why all of a sudden are we concerned about this?
Well, it looked fake as hell, and it looked, you know, it was very much from the promotion that gave you the fizzling sparklers at the end of a pay-per-view comes.
Thank you.
they're getting – we. You know, I talked about this as Bruce Mitchell makes his return to podcasting with his new thing on Multimedia Mouth, who is run by a guy named Ruben Jay, who seems like a very sharp guy. We talked about it immediately, and Bruce and I were under the impression that it wasn't great, but it didn't take me out of it the way the thing at the end of the pay-per-view with Kenny Omega did. I looked at it. It was obvious crash pattery. It was obvious, but I thought it got over what it needed to get. I thought MJF looked really good, and if they decide to build toward MJF and Jericho for, again, I'm assuming that their WrestleMania is going to be that Labor Day weekend thing. I guess.
What's it called? Do we know?
It All In? Was that what they originally called it?
We're starting over again.
I'm assuming that's going to be their WrestleMania. I don't know. That could be a fact, but I'm, you know, that may be what they're setting up for. If they wanted to do that, that would be a nice build. They've got a few months to tell that story.
I think that would be about the perfect time to do. I mean, amount of time to tell a good story without overdoing it. You know,
I agree.
Now Labor Day. That's a decent time for any kind of storytelling.
Plus some of the shades that they told with Sammy Guevara being the guy who calls it off, but Sammy Guevara was also the guy that gave the other team the advantage, so there may be some heat between the team members and him. I thought that was fine. I even thought, you know, I've been very critical of Sean Spears, and I thought Sean Spears was not bad in that match, you know?
Yeah, I can't say anything real negative about him in that match.
The turning point for that match to me was Guevara gets up on the top rope, and I can't remember who he gave this move to, but he gave the Spanish Fly to somebody. They teetered for a moment. He recovered, and he's able to execute the move very well. And I thought that was the turning point. If that hadn't gone that well, I don't think the match in general goes as well as it could have.
Yeah, that could have set off a little trail of things to come if that messes up. I can see what you're saying.
But I thought he executed it well. He recovered well, and I thought everybody performed real well. And it's the whole show was very good. They gave the guys about 40 minutes for that match. I wasn't as hot on the Miro thing as Bruce was. I thought the Miro thing seemed like an afterthought, like, oh, we need a couple of minutes to kind of set things up before we go and he comes on, he cuts the promo or whatever. But I understand completely why they did it. And all the angles seem to be working out pretty well. They've set up some pretty good stuff, and they did a good job of hitting the basics. Like, this is why you should watch us next week. It's going to be Pac against Orange Cassidy, and the winner's going to challenge for the title. And, you know, SCU won their match. They're going to challenge the Young Bucks. So that's another reason for you to check us out. And I thought they did a really good job of doing all that stuff.
I will say one thing, and I don't think it really has, and this is a nitpick kind of thing, but
okay,
you said SCU, and it made me think, I would have liked that whole setup, even though I'm not a big, you know, proponent of a freaking Texas Tornado tag team matches or whatever, right, you know, multi-team right. tag team matches. But I liked all the tag teams in there, and I think I would have enjoyed it more if I didn't know for almost a 100% absolute fact that SCU were going to win, because the whole setup for that was a couple of weeks or so ago when they came out and confronted the Bucks, and you could see it coming. I mean, it was just obvious, you know, they faced off against each other. So I just thought that match was kind of pointless, because it just seemed like everybody should have known who the hell was going to win that match. And it just took away from it, I think, a lot for me. But again, I liked everybody in there. I just think that kind of put a little damper on it for me.
I think they did a good job of doing a couple of things right during that match. And I think you made a solid point. I think they let Jungle Boy have his moments, and they're building him up as I'm comparing him to kind of a I don't want to say a poor man's, but sort of a in progress sort of Ricky Morton type babyface is what they're doing with him.
Yeah.
It feels like, and they let him get beat up pretty good, but he also had some good fire comeback spots and stuff like this. So I think they're doing a good job with him. The guys came out. I can't remember the name of that that tag team. They were rapping and they talk about Dark Side of the Ring. So they were alluding to something.
Is that-
yes. Yeah, that's the guy. And then they eventually have Bryan Jr. He eats the pinfall on the match and everything. So I thought that kind of they did a pretty good job of doing all that stuff.
What do you think about Miro? I mean, I know you said you weren't into that one particular deal, but do you think they're going to push him to like world title status here? Or do you think they're going to kind of keep him kind of where he is now with like a TNT title person?
Well, he needs to be a monster who just kicks all the ass in the world. And I think they've already missed an opportunity to do that. They need they need to put a new, fresh paint of coat on him. Hi, Bruce Pritchard. But I think Bruce Mitchell said it right. He said he's one of these guys that's just kind of trying to dig himself out from years of 50-50 booking. Any guy they put on the roster over there who's a WWE, they just have to kind of dig themselves out from that shit. And that becomes very, very difficult to do. I believe he can go over. I don't know if he's established himself as any kind of a brand right now.
Yeah.
When he came out and he was the best man, and then he was buddies with Penelope Ford, and then and all of that shit, and wearing the Mickey Mouse T-shirt and stuff.
I was never big on that either, man. I'm with
there's you not that. He's not established. There's nothing there as far as even establishing yourself as a vanilla brand. There's just nothing that's really sticking. And I'm the best man. And then he was a kind of a comedy figure for a while, and then
yeah,
they're trying to make him into a kick-ass guy and stuff. So I think they still haven't established what his specific brand is going to be. So there still is some confusion about that whole situation to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I have mixed feelings about it. I think if you see, I keep going back to when he was in NXT and right. He was, God dang, what was it? What was his,
Rusev. He was Rusev.
It was Alexander Rusev, right? Or right. Something like that.
Right.
And he was a badass.
He
was almost unstoppable, you know, kind of dude. Got to fucking main roster, and I won't say he laid an egg as bad as some of the other people did, but he didn't last very long until Lana and all that stupid shit started, you know. And then if they can get him back to where Alexander what's his face was back in NXT, I think they'll have something, man. They got some gold there. I think.
Yeah.
You're talking about the whole comedy thing. I think that comedy thing is kind of put some dents in that armor, man, of being a tough guy. You know, don't right. you think?
I would agree. Yeah, I think he was almost supposed to be kind of an Umaga like character, I think, when he came in.
Yeah.
And we talked about time and again how they've blown the transition from NXT when you come out of there with a lot of heat and a lot of momentum, and then all of a sudden you hit the main roster and they just don't know what to do with you. They just don't know mm-hmm. how to book you, or they put you in the 50-50 situation, and you get your ass kicked half the time, and it's like, how am I supposed to build any momentum based on that?
Right. And then and just pairing him up with Lana, man, that just did not bode well at all.
It felt very awkward and weird. And then, I don't know. And then she was like more over than him. And then everything kind of got kind of sideways. Everyone went pear-shaped on that one. I don't know how to describe it. Even if you, one of the things that I pointed out is that even with this promotion with AEW, they've got this kind of reputation of making chicken salad out of chicken shit. That terrible end of that pay-per-view with Kenny Omega and the fizzled out non-exploding ring, and then all of a sudden Eddie Kingston covers up John Moxley and acts like, you know, a bomb has truly gone off. But that's even that has resulted in Moxley and Kingston becoming as good as any buddy cop movie out there, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say this because I really don't know, but I've been in my head, I've been kind of giving the credit all to Kingston and Moxley, not to AEW, so to
speak. That's true.
I would be hard pressed to think if it were two other dudes, just random guys that would happen to. I don't know if they would have been able to dig themselves out of it
with
AEW's help or not.
it's a testament to their talent that they were able to take that, run with it, and do some great stuff with it. Maybe if you go through, and we're almost halfway through the year, I think Eddie Kingston's the MVP of this promotion so far, based on everything that's happened. Yeah. You'd have to say that there is other Jericho. Bigger stuff. Well, Jericho's always going to be, so far, the biggest figure since they began. But given everything and what has been dealt and what he's been able to make out of it, Eddie Kingston has just been tremendous in this promotion this year.
Oh, yeah. I love Eddie Kingston. And I think he – see, I don't know, man. Miro's really not that young either. I mean, he's, what – pushing 40 or right at 40 or
he's old guy,
and so is Kingston. I mean, he's getting up there too, so I hope that they do let Kingston get one more run before he hangs it up anytime. But they got so many freaking people in AEW, man. It's hard to keep up sometimes with who kind of sits where on the totem pole, you know.
Miro is 36 years old.
36, okay.
So there
you
go.
Not quite as old as I thought, but I knew he was getting, up toward 40, if nothing else.
Eddie Kingston is 39. He will be 40 in December.
All right.
So there you go. You're right. Those guys are really getting up there, per se. But then again, you look at people like Sting, and they're supposed to be the top guys in the promotion, too. They're young pups compared to
Christian.
Christian Cage. Holy Lord. We're not even talking about that guy, are we?
Yeah.
Instant buyer's remorse.
I like Christian, man. I do. And I do feel bad about being disappointed in the big Paul White announcement when he got brought in. And I think he kind of got a bad rap for that. And I'm just as much to blame for it as anybody. But at the same time, it's just like we're talking. I mean, you're going to bring these guys in and they're already pushing. What is their purpose? What is Christian Cage's purpose in coming in here?
I would assume.
Do we know?
I would assume it's to get younger talent over. I would think. I mean, he's a practically Hall of Famer in WWE's world. He's a well-known entity. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to have like a younger guy come up. And if you're like, if you don't know wrestling that much or haven't been following it, you go, wow, this guy must be pretty good. He just beat Christian. That would be my supposition.
Yeah.
For his purpose.
But the thing about it is they got him paired off at the beginning with fucking dude SCU guy.
Yeah.
So it's like, what was that all about? I don't know. I mean, it seemed like an idea, but it just kind of went nowhere. And I'm like, well, okay. Looking back, it's like, what was that all about?
Isn't it funny though that we're talking about Jericho's fake fall through those crash pads, but we're not talking about Darby Allin tumbling like a son of a bitch down those stairs.
No crash pads on that son, bitch.
Kudos to Darby Allin. I mean, I don't know the wisdom of taking such a such a bump, but holy shit, he went down there like a champ,
dude. I'm not saying you went to school necessarily with somebody like this, but you had to have known somebody at some point in your life like Darby Allin, for real, IRL, that would do shit like this.
I may have been that guy.
And just never get hurt.
It might have been me.
It might have been you. Oh.
Yeah, I might have been that guy.
Damn. Good for you, man. I hate I missed all those bumps.
I jumped out of a moving car one time. The car wasn't going that fast, but I was just like fucking around. Yeah, I did some shit.
What are you doing?
I did some crazy ass shit, without regard. But there was no crowd and no money to be made. That's for sure.
All right, I'm gonna go old school again. Are you like the fall guy? Are you like the majors?
I am. I'm Colt Seaver,
the unknown Florida stunt man
that makes Redford look so fine. That's what I do. we're talking about how fake that looked. But they're like, holy shit, this guy's got thrown down some stairs like IRL, like for real. I mean, I know some of the shit was taped, and I really don't see the point of QT Marshall showing his bare ass on television or whatever.
What
that was kind of
hell is that?
They just do some superfluous, stupid shit that doesn't draw anything. I thought that the announcing this week didn't bother me as much as it normally does. I think JR's doing not a good job. I think Tony's always been doing a good job. And Excalibur should really, he should take a fall down some stairs. If somebody should go down some stairs.
Speaking of.
That's your guy right there. That's your dude.
God, dude. Tony, I'll say it. If I've said it once, I'll say it again. And I'll say it next week, I'm sure. And the week after that, and the week after that, until something happens. Tony Schiavone is putting AEW's announcing on his motherfucking back.
Yes, it's true. Did you hear what he said when MJF had him up there, had Jericho up there the first time? He goes, "Is this piece of shit going to throw him off?"
It sounds so natural, man.
It was so great. I was like, "This is wonderful."
That's awesome.
This is amazing. There was a lot of blood and stuff, but I think. It's okay because, to me, that differentiates itself from the other product. You're not going to mistake that for WWE because WWE is not going to have that stuff. The Cody blood was real. The other stuff was obviously, you know, it was.
Where did Cody get that?
It was under his eye. I didn't see the, but it was definitely hard. Yeah, it was definitely hard way for sure.
Yeah, you don't get that. They don't.
They do, you know, they do it. They do a couple of things that will differentiate themselves from the other product. I don't mind. And some of it's superfluous. Some of it's like using some foul language. They had the violence warning at the beginning of it at 8 o'clock. So if you're watching the end of Jack Reacher going into it, you're like, oh, well, what is this? Which I think is interesting because some people, yeah. I when I was talking to Bruce, I compared it to like back in the 80s and 90s when we put the warning sticker on the CDs. Those are the ones you wanted to go buy.
Yeah, you're okay. Right.
I've never heard of NWA. I don't know who Ice-T is, but if there's a warning, if Tipper Gore don't want me to buy it, then fuck, I got to get it.
I got to get this. Let's see what this is all about.
That's the deal. When you were younger and the rated R movies were the ones you wanted to go see, right?
Of course.
I mean, that was the stuff. So I don't have a problem with them differentiating themselves in that way from the other product. You want to make yourself different. You want to make yourself seem like you're not WWE light or whatever. So I'm cool with all of that. I don't really have an issue with it. I think sometimes it does seem gratuitous or whatever, but
that's exactly what I was going to say. Sometimes it seems a little forced.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish they just let it, like the Schiavone one you just said. That sounds so just perfect. That's the way it should be done.
That was great. It's so good when he does that stuff. Daniel Bryan is a free agent. At the end of SmackDown, the storyline was that he can no longer come back to SmackDown because he lost a match to Roman Reigns with a ton of interference, and he did it in such a heroic way that he passed out, and that's how he ended his career on SmackDown. And now Dave Meltzer and others are confirming that Daniel Bryan is no longer under contract with World Wrestling Entertainment. Of course, there's a lot of speculation about his future. And anytime anyone of any drawing power gets released or ends their tenure with WWE, they're going to say they're going over to AEW, along with the 70 other guys that are appearing on television that they can't seem to get over. I don't know about stacking his body on there. What are your thoughts on Daniel Bryan and his leaving WWE?
Honestly, I really didn't realize his contract was legit up after SmackDown until – to be honest, when I heard you and Bruce talking about it,
right.
I was like, wow, I had no clue, dude. I thought it was a whole, he's going to Raw or going to NXT, you know, the whole Finn Balor kind of thing or something. But when you said that, I was like, well, damn. Okay. But to be honest, and we were just talking about this, I can't believe he would go to AEW because of all the freaking people they've got on that show right now. And if he goes anywhere, I would think he would just kind of pick and choose kind of shit, you know, not really go anywhere, just kind of tool around.
The speculation for me, and this is complete speculation, is he takes the rest of the year off and then – you know, they just throw stupid money at him for New Japan and he does Wrestle Kingdom and he wrestles a dream match against Will Ospreay or Okada or something like that. That would be my badass speculation.
That would be.
Of course, you know, what I said with Bruce was, you know, they just throw stupid money at him and CM Punk for like a huge Wrestle Kingdom thing. And
dude,
that would be amazing.
Dude.
But yeah, I would.
I will have to say, dude, with a little asterisk, because Punk has not been in a ring in, I don't know what, 5, 6, 7 years, something.
It's been a while. It's been a while, yeah.
So, I mean, unless he's been training on his own or something that we don't know about, I don't know. I don't know what to think about that match now that I've had to put that in perspective. But yeah, it sounds great. It could be great.
I just feel like Daniel wants to he's okay. And like you said, with the thing with AEW, Tony Khan, again, can write him whatever check he wants to. If Daniel doesn't want to do it, he's not going to do it because he's not motivated by money. I think he's been able to save whatever he's had.
Oh, I bet.
The wife is bringing in plenty of dough. I think they're good. So he doesn't have to go and just whore himself out like anybody else.
Why would he want to do that? I mean, seriously. Why would he want to go whore himself out, you know? Logically.
If Tony Khan pays him stupid money, then he could – I'm just going to, again, speculate. He could start some sort of foundation based on environmental shit and stuff like that. I mean, if that's a humanitarian thing that he wanted to do, that would be something that he could do. There's a lot of moving parts here. Obviously, the Bellas – You've heard all this speculation about the Bellas doing business again with the WWE and the stuff that they want to do in protecting their brand. And then he's got his thing going. He doesn't want to damage that. I don't think he does anything for a while and just kind of heals up and hangs out with the kids. I think that's probably what he wants to do right now is just go home and just chill out for the rest of the year. I'm saying the rest of the year, but for a while. Then, you know,
I was going to say rest of the year is a long time, man.
You know, five or six. I would love to see him on Wrestle Kingdom.
When is that? January 4th,
January 2nd, somewhere around in there is when they do that. And you know, there's any number of people, any number of dream match scenarios you could go with. If you wanted to do a Chris Jericho, I'm sure you know any of the guys in AEW, they've worked well in New Japan, and Tony would let them work. So if you wanted to do Cody, or if you wanted to do Chris Jericho, or if you wanted to do – if he says, I like that Max Friedman guy, go ahead and bring him over. Or if he – you know, he could pick anybody on that roster that he wants to, you think is on that kind of a level. Or it could be Will Ospreay, or it could be Okada, or it could be any number of people.
Yeah.
That you could do and say, hey, we'll do it. It's a one-off situation, or we'll just do the Wrestle Kingdom, and then we'll do New Year's Dash, and then we'll call it a day, and I'll go home, and we'll figure this thing out somewhere down the road.
Do you think, though, and I'm just trying to put myself in Daniel Bryan's shoes as best as I can here. Don't you think, though, when he was out right after his neck injury and all, don't you think he's been on the shelf for that amount of time that he doesn't really want to go sit around again like he did before?
Maybe, because he was itching so much to wrestle before, but I mean his life has changed tremendously ever since then. You know, you got the two little kids at home, you got the wife who's no longer in the business anymore. So I mean, I think he's always been the kind of guy. He's always been like the guy that wants to be like the dad, just to hang out with the kids and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
It could be. I was just, you know, since he, like I said, you know, since he seemed like he was so gung-ho and anxious to get back in the ring, I don't know if he'd want to sit back and let 7 months go by while he got older and then try to go back in the ring again. But I see your point about being a dad. Oh, I definitely freaking get that. I just try and look at it from a wrestling perspective, I guess.
You know, the way that he's treated his body and the way that he's worked out and the way that he's eaten over the years, his body is going to be a little more resilient than other guys anyway, just based on the kind of lifestyle he's lived. And you know, he's never been a drinker. He's never been a drug guy. He's never done any of that stuff. He's always been a guy who's obviously he's taken some very risky bumps in his life. But at the same time, he's also been a guy whose diet has always been on point. He's always trained. He's always stretched and done all the things he needed to do as much as he could to heal his body. So I think he's still going to have, you know, opportunities to do whatever he wants to. And I think that's going to be the question that he and his wife are going to be asking is like, do we want a long term commitment to anybody? Was that something that we want? And if we don't do that, are we going to be valuable to somebody? And do we care? Do we even care if we're valuable? We've got this much money coming in. I'm doing okay here. You've got the Birdie B stuff that's happening. You've got your career and stuff. Maybe I can just chill out for a while and just kind of pick my spots and see what happens.
And then maybe he could All right. I'm thinking selfishly again, but maybe he can come to WrestleCade.
That would be lovely. I wouldn't have a problem with that at all. What you don't want to see if you're Daniel Bryan is you don't want to sign up with AEW and then all of a sudden you and Don Callis are wrestling around on fucking Impact or some shit.
That's
like that.
The problem.
That's bullshit the problem. Like that. It's like, hey, come on up here and we'll just get something going on. It'd be so good. We'll record something and we'll have the Good Brothers beat you down. I'm like, no.
That's what I'm thinking about when you were saying that he might do that and use the money for charity work, which is great. But I don't know if I want to watch that. I don't want to see Daniel Bryan and Sean Spears. You know, I don't know if I want to see that.
They continue to try to get Sean Spears over.
Yeah.
And again, you know, with the caveat that Sean Spears was perfectly fine in that War Games match on Wednesday. He was perfectly fine. I mean, I've been very critical of him. I don't think he can get over with a you know, a pole and any. I don't think he can get over at all. But at the same time, he was fine with that match on Wednesday.
I'm sorry, man. I'm going to say this too, just like Miro. I don't think he was as big as Miro, but when Spears was in NXT, and doing the perfect 10 thing, it was good, but it did have a shelf life, and it just there was just no oomph there. I mean, right. I enjoyed seeing him come out, and it was a little different. The countdown, the 10. I mean, it was.
But beyond
but then
that,
it got to a point, it just got, you know, it just kind of got over. Like,
beyond 10, there was nothing else there.
Exactly, man. Right. It was like you just didn't know what to do with him. I mean, he wasn't bad in the ring, but it was just, I don't know, man. But I liked him so much more in NXT, just like Miro. And then once you got to, you know, they definitely didn't know what to do with Spears once he got to Raw. Well,
ultimately, that's the problem with AEW is there's just too many people on there. And I think Meltzer had it a few weeks ago. There's like 60 people on the screen. And you're not going to get anybody over when you're trying to do something for 60 human beings in a two-hour show.
And look at that. Excuse me. Look at that scroll that comes across the bottom of the screen on AEW Dark. How many freaking matches there are on that?
It's stupid.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
There has to be some decisions made. I understand you need some folks to work, particularly at the mid card. But you know, the QT Marshalls of the world, the Long John Silvers of the world. I'm sorry, some of those guys have got to go bye bye. I'm sorry. They got to go. Some of y'all got to go because
some of y'all got to go.
Yeah, either you do that or you do the thing that they try to do with Nitro and Thunder, and you try to do two shows. Sometimes somebody's going to make two shows and do it right. It's going to happen someday. At various times, WWE did have great stuff going on with SmackDown and Raw, and Vince fucked it up because he couldn't stand the idea that SmackDown was better than Raw, so he would immediately sabotage it. But someday somebody's going to get that right, and I don't know. I mean, they were number one this past week on cable in their time slot. AEW was. So I don't – again, the guy who was the big guy for the network that championed them – he's gone now. So
he's gone, yeah.
I don't know if you could ever say to the network, but I understand the network has given him some new paper and everything, so they're good to go. But then the deal with the NHL just came up. So, they got to find some room for some of those NHL games on TNT and TBS now.
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, NHL plays every night of the week. I don't know which night brings in more money over the other night, if that is such a thing, but you never know. It might be Wednesday night hockey is the night for hockey, you know?
If you establish yourself as the number one show on Wednesday night, they're going to be a lot less likely to touch you. They'll let you go on Tuesday night. But then if you go to the network and you go, well, we have too many people on our show. We need another show. Can you give us, I don't know, some other night? Can you give us some other night? And you don't want to be like exiled to Saturday or Sunday or something like that. Or obviously Friday's out of bounds. So I don't even know if you could do that. But the easy thing is Tony Khan stopped writing checks to so many people. And I'm so happy that Colt Cabana is getting a weekly paycheck and doing absolutely nothing for it. So I'm glad that he, you know, everybody for years with all these Colt Cabana marks would be like, man, if some promotion would use him and he signed on a promotion and he ain't jack shit. He ain't nothing.
He's a faceless part of the Dark Order.
Michael Nakazawa is kicking Michael his who? Ass. Knock it off and get off my TV. That guy is kicking your ass right now, Colt Cabana. He is destroying you, and he ain't doing shit but getting beat up as a cameraman. That's all that motherfucker's doing right now. And Colt Cabana, he's kicking your ass. I know it's become pretty fashionable to talk about the number of factions they've got on that show. They should probably have maybe let's limit it to six if we could. That'd be great.
That's ridiculous, man. It's almost a farce. They're making fun of themselves by doing it.
I get Pinnacle. I get Inner Circle. Again, I've never liked the Dark Order. Don't give a shit about them. Don't know if we need the Gun Club. Don't know if Team Taz is actually essential what we're doing. I'm not really sure if we need all of those.
The Nightmare family or whatever.
If we could just pare it down to maybe 16 factions. 16 factions, and then
I don't think that's asking a whole lot.
I don't think it is. It's like, I just can't stop paying these people. I have to keep writing checks to these motherfuckers for doing nothing. We're actually adding nothing.
Hey, I've got another idea for a faction.
Hang on, one more faction. Well, that's good. But then they keep excusing it with, well, New Japan has like 50 factions. Well, you're not New Japan, motherfucker. You're not. Get out of my face. All right. Would you like to know what you missed on SmackDown this week?
Yes.
WWE Universal Champion Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, and Paul Heyman made their way to the ring. They recapped Reigns beating Daniel Bryan last week, showed him passing out. So at least they've kept the door open, and they, you know, Daniel Bryan has done business right. So if he comes back one day, he can come back. The door is open, as they say, if that's what he wants to do. Cole stressed that Bryan is barred from SmackDown. Heyman held the title and did a eulogy for the career of Daniel Bryan. All three stood in the ring with their heads down as Heyman did a 10-bell salute for Bryan's career. They piped in loud, "You suck" chants. Roman noted he's a man of his word and he gives everybody what they want. He said Bryan didn't want to be on SmackDown, or he'd acknowledge him as the head of the table. Reigns then replaced him and introduced the returning Jimmy Uso. Jimmy was thrilled to be back. He hugged Jay, then embraced Reigns and shook Heyman's hand. Cesaro's music interrupted. He walked out. He noted that Reigns claimed he replaced Bryan, but that's not possible. Seth Rollins jumped Cesaro and they brawled around ringside. Suddenly, Teddy Long's music hit and he danced onto the ramp for Teddy Throwback Long. SmackDown. Yeah, it's Throwback SmackDown.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Never mind.
Long announced that if Cesaro beats Rollins tonight, he gets a Universal title shot at Backlash. Long noted Adam Pearce gave him the power to make the match. So is Pearce on vacation? We gave Pearce the night off after being the star of both of our WWE television shows for most of this year.
Yeah, Sonya Deville seems to be the person running the show these days, but
she's great in that role, by the way.
I love her like that.
She's fantastic in that role. Reigns knocked Cesaro to the floor from behind, and Rollins sent him to the stairs. This was a good opening segment, I would agree. Cesaro defeats Seth Rollins. The story here was that the Usos interfered in the match, and I think it was Jay that did most of the stuff against me. Let me take a look here.
Again, in the Rollins Cesaro match,
they did.
Okay.
Rollins pushed Jay down, so Jimmy rocked him with a super kick. Cesaro hit a plancha onto Jimmy and threw Rollins back in the ring. He followed up with a Gotch neutralizer, so Cesaro wins, and he gets the title shot for WrestleMania Backlash. The Usos knew immediately they were screwed up because they showed backstage. Roman Reigns was not happy, and Rollins was, of course, furious. And then Rollins approaches Roman Reigns backstage. He says he wants to know if he should be mad at Reigns or his cousins. Reigns noted he's also upset and that he's going to deal with it. They played the old WrestleMania theme from the 80s. They showed Stone Cold Steve Austin attacking Booker T in the supermarket from the December 2001 SmackDown. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I do.
Hey, Booker, got milk? And slams him with the and shit. Clean up on aisle five, you son of a bitch. It was really funny. That whole thing was really, really good. Back in the back, Teddy Long spoke with Sonya Deville. Deville's excited to run SmackDown with Long tonight. Sami Zayn approached and talked about his conspiracy theories against him. Long tried to help Zayn and announced a match against The Undertaker. Zayn pointed out that Undertaker's retired. Long then announced a 10-man match and said one of Zayn's partner is King Booker. Deville corrected him and that it's King Corbin. Long Deville and Zayn danced to end the segment, although Zayn was not in the mood to dance. Roman Reigns speaking to his cousin in his dressing room. Reigns was furious that Jimmy helped Cesaro when earlier he pointed out that Reigns and Jay had a good operation going and he let Jimmy be a part of it, and Jimmy has come in and screwed things up. Jimmy stood up for himself and told Reigns not to talk to him any old way. You just can't talk to me any old way. Jay glared at Jimmy. Jimmy left. Reigns told Jay to speak to him. It was a really good segment. That's I agree. Carmella over Ruby Riott. Remember when Ruby Riott used to be a badass?
I do. I sure now, do.
She's just a jag, just another gal. The SmackDown moment of the week featured Edge and Hulk Hogan winning the SmackDown team titles on July 4th, 2002. I believe they captured those titles over Billy and Chuck. I think that's what I saw. That was a very – do you remember the whole Billy and Chuck excitement and about how that played out into a real-life gay marriage sort of thing and the boys were making, like, real talk shows and stuff talking about it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was –
interesting times.
Yeah, interesting.
Bayley came out to the ring and talked about how awesome she was, and she talked about some of the great women in SmackDown history, including – or in WWE history, including like Alundra Blaze, Trish Stratus, Jackie, and Ivory. But of course, none of them can measure up to her, which was actually pretty funny. And then Bianca Belair comes out. She makes her way to the ring. Belair noted she lives her best life and it's only about to get better at Backlash. Belair appreciates Bayley's concern, but she thinks she should worry about herself. Bianca Belair said she's on her way to becoming the longest running SmackDown Women's Champion. And started laughing, and Bayley started laughing in Belair's face. Eventually, they brawled. Belair beat down Bayley in the ring. Bayley fought back and pulled at Belair's earring. She beat down Belair to beat the segment. This was pretty good. In the back, Jay approached Jimmy. Jay wanted to know if Jimmy meant what he said. Jimmy got in Jay's face and noted he's the reason Roman Reigns is the Universal Champion. Jimmy noted their family, and he's asking for his brother's support. Jimmy then talked about the Usos becoming the tag team champions, and think about that. It was another good segment involving the angle. Throwback SmackDown moment of the week, June 27th, 2002. Match between John Cena and Kurt Angle. This was Cena's debut. It was Ruthless Aggression, as you might recall.
Ah, yes.
Another historic SmackDown moment. There we go. That's not bad. They did have some good shit tonight. Dominic Mysterio defeats Dolph Ziggler. This was supposed to be a match with Rey Mysterio. But Dolph Ziggler started talking shit to Dominic, who looks like he's very thin. Looks like he's lost some of that baby fat now. And so they give Dominic a big win over Dolph Ziggler.
Dominic's pretty good, man. I enjoy watching him.
To be that young, and of course the people he's wrestling deserve a lot of the credit because they made him look pretty good.
No shit. Yes.
His timing is not bad for a guy who's not been in the ring. To be that young, he's pretty darn good. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, he definitely impressed me. I didn't expect much from him. You know, I thought they were just doing Ray a favor, basically.
I agree. And but the kid can work a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. That whole Seth Rollins and he's impressive. Dude's impressive.
I think the kid knows his limitations, you know? And he's wrestling against these veterans who were able to polish him up and kind of work toward his strengths and stuff. And they should be given a lot of the credit for that. But he's got some good timing. The kid can work. He's pretty athletic.
Yeah, honestly. And that whole Brock Lesnar thing, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
That was, it was something.
In the back, Kayla Braxton interviewing Reginald Jackson Baszler. Braxton noted Reginald takes on Tamina tonight. Reginald promised to defeat Tamina. Reginald had a t-shirt with Nia and Shayna's pictures on it. It was pretty funny. They showed an old 80s commercial for WWF ice cream bars featuring Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the voice of Lord Alfred Hayes. Paul, by the way, have you ever seen any of the old Mid-South shit with Bill Watts? He can never say Duggan's name. Duggan is either Dugan or Duggan. He can never settle on what it is. Anytime. This is funny. Paul Heyman approaches Roman Reigns in the locker room. Reigns told Heyman to bring him his cousin. Heyman asked which cousin. And then Reigns glared at him. And Heyman goes, oh, okay. Yeah. It was really good. Roman Reigns is magnificent. He's essentially he's really the Stone Cold Steve Austin of this show right now.
Oh yeah.
In that, you know, Vince every week would just go to the writers' meeting and go, okay, what are we going to do with Stone Cold this week? What are we doing? And that's essentially, I think, what happens is, what am I doing with Roman this week? I think that's essentially what they're asking at these writers' meetings now.
Well, I'm just glad it's like it is now and not like it was back two or three, 4 years ago or whenever, when they were pushing him up everybody's ass and it was just was horrible.
Bryant, all they had to do was do what we told them to do for all those years. All they had to do was turn him in, and Bruce can't even acknowledge that we were right all those years to say, just turn the guy heel. That's all you had to do.
It's not hard. It wasn't hard.
Tamina defeats Reginald, and then Tamina and Natalia were beat down by Nia and Shayna Baszler, setting up the match for WrestleMania Backlash there.
All right, I'm going to ask a stupid question here.
Yeah.
Who are the heels here? Or are they both heels?
No, I'm pretty sure.
I should say, who's the baby faces? Who are the baby faces?
That's a good question, too. I'm pretty sure Nia and Shayna are the heels. At least they acted like heels and wrestled like heels and were very cowardly tonight and used their advantage with another member to beat somebody down. So that to me, those are the accoutrement of a heel. So yes. I'm thinking they might be heels. I don't know. But you ask a decent question.
No, I know. I just pose these silly queries sometimes, and I feel like they're just useless because
The Apollo Crews faction now consists of Otis, Chad Gable, Sami Zayn, and King Corbin. Very natural pairing, I would say.
Is this something I missed on SmackDown?
That they were together as a team and with Commander Aziz. And they defeated Big E, Shinsuke Nakamura, the Street Profits, and Kevin Owen. And it was fine. It was a 10-man match and whatever.
So they're not really in a faction then?
No, but they were tonight for no reason. Okay,
yeah, that's really stupid. Yeah. Otis.
Roman Reigns spoke with Jey Uso in his dressing room. He talked about everything they accomplished. Noted they deal with Jimmy Uso in the ring. They aired clips of Eddie Guerrero and Vince McMahon and Guerrero's lowrider in a SmackDown flashback. Good closing segment. The angle played out well throughout the show. Universal Champion Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, and Paul Heyman stood in the ring. Reigns began to speak, but Jimmy Uso interrupted. Jimmy wanted to know where Jey stands. So this is what they're doing. Jey Uso's got to choose between his brother and his cousin. Jimmy showed clips from the Hell in a Cell last October where Reigns battled Jey in an I Quit match, of course. Jey would not submit until Jimmy tried to interfere, and then Roman Reigns put him in the guillotine. And then Jey threw in the towel. Jimmy said, I would not have quit. That's what he said. He got in Reigns' face. He noted that he would not have quit. Mm-hmm. Reigns told Jimmy to fall in line and acknowledge him. Reigns noted if Jimmy doesn't want to, he can go home and watch SmackDown with his kids. Jimmy turned around and jumped out of the ring. He started to walk away but stopped. Jey chased after Jimmy down the aisle. He tried to convince Jimmy to align with them. Suddenly, Cesaro started beating the shit out of Roman Reigns in the ring, beat him down. Initially, Jimmy stopped Jey from going in and saving Roman. Then Jey jumped in the ring, but Cesaro beat him down too. And then Jimmy kind of went, damn. And then he jumped in the ring too to save Jey, but Cesaro rocked him with a pop-up uppercut. Cesaro then gave Jey the Gotch neutralizer. Cesaro then picked up Roman Reigns and hit the Gotch neutralizer on him as well. Michael Cole yelled that Cesaro could prove that he could beat Reigns for the title. And at the end of SmackDown against the Samoans, Cesaro stood tall. There you go. There's your setup for the go-home show next week before WrestleMania Backlash.
Yeah. Boy, it just doesn't seem like Cesaro is going to come out on top of this one, does it?
It doesn't feel like it, but it feels like at least they're kind of building him up to something, you know?
Well, that's the problem, man. I don't want it to – and it's nice, I guess, that he's getting the boost, but so, you know, Roman defeats him at the pay-per-view, then what?
Yeah, we bring up another guy to try to go against the indestructible Roman Reigns, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I want Cesaro to be pushed and really to be a champion for a while at some point, it would just feel weird.
It seems unlikely. This goes back to your SCU scenario. You knew completely going into that match who was going to win that one, so it wasn't that interesting. It was a little less interesting to you.
And to be honest, I would think there would be a little bit more of a chance of Cesaro winning if Jimmy didn't come back. But with the whole Jimmy coming back, It just makes you think that it's just not going to happen. And it would just be weird anyway to have Roman end up losing to Cesaro at this point.
Well, don't you think?
Because I don't think they built Cesaro up enough to be that guy yet.
But isn't the idea that maybe Jimmy's going to get fed up and he's going to help out Cesaro? Maybe he's going to have that moment of conscience where he's got to figure out whether to go with his family or to what he should do.
Maybe. I didn't really think about that. But still, man, I just think it would be weird to have Roman lose the belt to Cesaro at this point.
It would be.
And I know they have built Cesaro up, but it's really not been that long of a period of time. It's only been over, about a 4 or 5 week span that they've him up, you know?
Right.
And I really think they need to build him up hard if they want him to be if they want him to beat Roman for the championship.
A legitimate challenger. And
SummerSlam.
Like a legitimate challenger to that.
Yes.
I got you. I was just listening to the first episode of My World with Jeff Jarrett. It's another one of those Conrad podcasts. I know what you're thinking. How many more of these can he do? But it's not bad. And Jeff Jarrett talks about the time he, quote unquote, held Vince McMahon up for money. So they do a little thing at the beginning where Conrad goes, can you just make me a pinky promise that you're not going to get on here and just shit on Dave Meltzer the way that everybody else that I talk to does? Could you please just not talk about Dave Meltzer like he's some amalgamation of Hitler, Stalin, and Satan before we begin this? And Jeff Jarrett salutes Dave Meltzer and says
I don't think he's ever.
He congratulates him on making a career out. See, this is this is what you got here. You've got Bischoff and Bruce Pritchard who try to shit on Dave Meltzer every opportunity they get. If the guy puts a comma in the wrong place, he's the worst thing. He's killed 70 million people. And then you have JR and you have Jeff Jarrett. I don't know how Kurt Angle stands on this stuff. And I think Schiavone shits on Meltzer from time to time because, you know, Dave Meltzer didn't put him up as announcer of the year and made him like worst announcer a couple times or something. But I've said this before, but I haven't said it in a while. You'll get these situations where Pritchard will be like, they'll go, well, what happened with such and such on this Jeff Hardy thing when back in 98 and blah, 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 blah. And Dave Meltzer wrote this, and the Pritchard go, God damn, it's not even right. It's so stupid. He just lies. He makes shit up. It's not true at all. And then they'll do the same thing. Conrad will go, all right, JR, this thing with Jeff Hardy when he did this and Dave Meltzer wrote this, and JR go, yeah, that's pretty much what happened. It happens all the time. It's a constant thing. It's like a constant thing.
God, man.
So that one is pretty good. Jericho talks to the guys who created Dark Side of the Ring, and that's a very good conversation on his podcast this week.
You know what? And I'll give Jericho some props, man. I think he does a really good job with the narration on those things. You know, say what you want about him. I know he maybe gets shoved down our throats sometimes, but I really think he does a really good job. So
I don't know. I thought Dutch was good on it too.
I thought Dutch was good too. I agree. I'm not saying he wasn't, but I do think Jericho does a good job too.
I feel like Jericho did something kind of shifty or shady to get that gig. And he pushed Mantell out of the way. There's just something tells me that happened.
I hope not, man.
Something tells me that he's just he's a son bitch about that stuff.
You know, they should switch off. You know, like have Jericho do the ones that Jericho has the voice for. Like I think Jericho would have been the person to do it for the Pillman one, for instance.
All of the Southern ones should be Mantell. Anything that's
Southern at all should be.
Any closing thoughts on another award-winning episode of Katie Vick is Alive Alive?
Out of the, I think, three announcements that we've seen for appearances at this year's WrestleCade, how do you feel about those three people? Have you seen those three people?
Remind me, is Kurt Angle one of them?
Kurt Angle is one of them.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
The other one is Wendy Richter.
Okay.
And the other one is Heath Slater.
I'm happy with those. I'm perfectly happy with those. They're building up a good deal. And help me.
I hope that's three good ones to start out with. Yeah.
I'm hopeful that everything's going to work out and we're going to be able to do what we used to do there and hang out.
I hope so.
Meet and greet the folks and you know, get our pictures taken with stuff. And I hope we get to see some of our old friends. I hope we get to see people like Rachel Ellering and Brian Pillman Jr. and some of those guys.
That'd be great, man. I'm looking so much forward to it. God, but, you know, I'm not going to get my hopes up totally, but, you know.
It's interesting because when we first, you know, the last time we were there, at least last time I was there and able to hang out and do all the stuff, the AEW thing was just kind of starting up. So,
yeah, AEW, that's when we were both, last time we were both there. That's when we saw Camille and all them and Pillman Jr. Yeah.
I don't know how Tony's going to feel about his guys going to stuff like that. I don't know, you know, how they're going to do it or how they're going to feel about it, but I'm happy to see it. A lot of guys, and there's a ton of guys. Obviously, I'd love to see Max. Max would be the guy you'd want to see for me from AEW, but there's a number of those guys in that promotion. It'd be great. You know, Jungle Boy would have a huge line if Jungle Boy came. Man. It's just a fantastic baby face, and the chicks dig him so much. So yeah, a lot of those guys from AEW would be perfectly welcome. But I think things are looking really good for WrestleCade, honestly.
Yeah, and that's another thing. I do hope AEW does let their people go do this, because that would, it would be a hot, commodity.
You would think. I mean, Tony Khan being such a fan, that I would hope that he would allow his guys.
Well, he could come. He could set up his own booth, you know.
He doesn't need the money, but for God's sakes, if he wanted to do it, that'd be great. I wouldn't have a problem with that. Mark out on yourself or what. I heard him make some really stupid comments about the Jaguars this week, but I can't remember what it was.
Stupid first pick.
I'm really hoping that I find it hard not to root very hard against the Jaguars. I find it really hard because I'm just not. Yeah, I have to root against them. I got to root against them because I like the kid from Clemson, and I've hated Clemson my whole life, but I like Trevor. I think he's a good kid.
They got the running back too, ATN. Yeah,
they got ATN too. And their defense looks good and stuff, but I don't like Urban Meyer. I don't like the fealty toward, oh, this guy's, I don't think, you know, it doesn't always translate to the pro ranks. And even when it does try and translate to the pro ranks and the guy does have some success, Pete Carroll fucks up the end of the Super Bowl. So, and
pass the ball. No, run the ball. No, pass the ball. No, run the ball.
I'm not completely convinced about the motives of Tony Khan's dad. I don't know about his participation. You know, they fired Urban Meyer, fired like three or four people in the front office for the Jags. One of them had been there since 1994, since the team began.
I have no use whatsoever for Urban Meyer. He alone makes me want to not root for the Jags.
He's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
He is, man.
Plus, I think he plays the God card quite a bit. I think he's on the God squad.
Yeah, and you know, he might have been a forerunner in what we're seeing today in that kind of sector.
I'll give you that.
You know what I'm saying?
And then you start hearing this shit about Tebow.
Yeah. You know? Well, yeah. Wanting tight end.
And shit like that. And you're like, okay. All right. I see where we're going here.
I see what's happening here.
But, you know, again, I hope WrestleCade works out, and I hope everybody gets their vaccinations, and I wish Tucker Carlson would quit running his dick licker, in the words of Jim Cornette. Jesus Christ.
Somebody needs to yank his larynx out, man.
How many people a day is the vaccine killing? Is it 30 now, or is it up to 60? I'm not sure what Dr. Carlson is telling us. Between him and Joe Rogan.
Well, Jesus. You know, that's like two of the famous doctors of Mount Rushmore, you know?
God,
Mount Rushmore of doctors.
Why can't both of you guys just die in a fiery car crash? Why is that not possible?
And you know, we're losing people like goddamn, you know, pick one, pick anybody.
Yeah. Why did Carl Reiner have to die, but Tucker Carlson still alive?
Yeah. Why couldn't he live 50 more years?
Bryant is on the social media at Bryce Sports. That'll get you him on Twitter and on Instagram, BRY Sports. Stanley Jackson 23 is his handle on the TikTok. Our show is followable on the Twitter machine at Katie Vick Alive. I am followable on the Twitter machine at Britt Whitmire. And on the Instagram, it's BW4Reels, BDUB, number 4, REELZ. And if you'd like to support what we do, you may have screwed up Mother's Day, but you can order something from Amazon for Dad over at our Amazon store, which is katievick.com. That is katievick.com. Until next time, fans, we'll see you ringside.
Fans, that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.